The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to send some email feedback, you can always reach us at td@kpcg.fm. Of course, you can get to the podcast of this program at the website as well, thetrumpet.com, and also the live stream, thetrumpet.com/live. Comes to you live every day, 7 a.m. Central Time. There in the middle part of the United States, 8 a.m. on the East Coast, here in the UK at 1 p.m. in the afternoon, and on the continent of Europe at 2 p.m. in most places. So all that, we have got listeners all over the world. And speaking of listeners, one of my colleagues who listens in and sometimes fills in at times, Brad McDonald, he's in Europe at the time. And he said in the hotel room, I guess one of the main news channels available is CNN. I guess it would be CNN International. And I mean, it is wall to, we haven't talked about it as much on this program. I'll finally get to a little bit of it today. But it has been wall-to-wall coverage of the Derek Chauvin trial there in Minneapolis. You've got the city of Minneapolis on edge as this police officer is now in court. And of course, generally, you know, in another time, the trial would be about evidence or lack thereof to find out if this particular man is guilty of murder or manslaughter or whatever the outcome. And so they're going to go through the autopsy. They're going to have the witnesses who were there filming the incident. And some of those people have been testifying this week. But you'll notice the networks are going to do everything that they can. And as Brad McDonald was telling me earlier, CNN's already decided. I mean, they know he's guilty. He's guilty before the trial even started. And then added to that, they want desperately to inject race into this story as well. In other words, he was murdered, George Floyd, because he was black. Because he was black. And some of that, the motivation behind it, and even the systemic problem in America, as we've heard so much about over the last many months, that's worked its way even into the courtroom. One of the witnesses yesterday, Darnella Frazier, I think she was underage at the time that George Floyd was killed, but I think she's 18 now, although they still aren't showing her face in court. But she's there testifying yesterday. And listen to the lawyer as he's basically asking this girl, so how did the death of George Floyd, how did that make you feel? This is clip 11.
Would you tell the ladies and gentlemen how you're viewing, experiencing what happened to George Floyd has affected your life?
When I look at George Floyd, I look at my dad, I look at my brothers, I look at my cousins, my uncles, because they are all black, and I look at that and I look at how that could have been one of them.
It could have been one of them because they're black and George Floyd was black. This, in other words, this happens all the time. Now, I suppose the defense will get into the fact that this man had overdosed on fentanyl. I think he had three times the OD amount in his system. He couldn't breathe even before he was down on the pavement. There's that. There's the fact that he was dealing in counterfeit money. There's the fact that Floyd and Chauvin evidently had an incident years earlier. They knew each other. But it's got to be about race. And as this young woman says, when she sees George Floyd, she sees her brother. She sees her cousins. She sees her father. Some of you might remember after George Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin, that was back in 2012, Barack Obama, he rushed to the microphone and he said pretty much the same thing. He said when he sees Trayvon Martin, he sees his family, he sees his daughters, he sees his what could have been his son, he sees himself. Here's Barack Obama in 2012 responding prematurely, we now know, responding prematurely to the Trayvon Martin case, clip 12.
And when I think about this boy, I think about my own kids. I think all of us have to do some soul searching to figure out how does something like this happen. You know, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon.
If I have a son, he'd look like Trayvon. So he said that in 2012. Of course, George Zimmerman, the following year, he's acquitted. Initially, you might recall, too, they wanted so badly for George Zimmerman to be white. Some reports even said it initially. A white man, George Zimmerman, kills the black man. And I mean, this falls right into the narrative. The black man was just walking through the neighborhood with a hoodie on. He got shot because he was wearing a hoodie. And he was shot by a white man. Well, we now know that he was attacked. George Zimmerman, that is. Trayvon attacked him. And he's a Latino, George Zimmerman. And so he shot him in self-defense. And was later acquitted. Did you know that Black Lives Matter, the movement, in many ways, it sprung from that Trayvon Martin altercation with George Zimmerman? BLM in 2012. My father at the time, he wrote this article. It was more about statements that then Attorney General Eric Holder had said. But he also referred to Barack Obama, and he says, this is not President Obama bringing us together as he pledged to do in his presidential campaign. He's leading the way into violent divisions. And I do mean violent. He's leading the way to violent divisions. He's dividing the United States. And so every time there was a white-on-black thing, it was Barack Obama leading the way, educating young people, like this woman who testified yesterday. When I look at George Floyd, I see my family, I see my relatives. This is all about race, in other words. Never mind the fentanyl, never mind the autopsy. How does a judge even let this in court, one wonders? How did it make you feel? How has this impacted your life? This trial's not about you. It's about this police officer and whether or not he's guilty. But how does it make you feel? It's perfect, really. When you think of it today, when it's all about the story, it's all about the narrative. It's not about facts or evidence, certainly not. That's been cast to the ground. It's just how we can carefully craft this storyline. And then if you've got CNN on the background in the hotel room, why, it's just blaring 24/7. That's right. They've got a message. And the message is that the United States of America is racist. And the George Floyd incident is proof of this. Now, back in 2012, as I say, the trial then followed. George Zimmerman, he was acquitted in 2013. And even after the facts were made known, you still had Barack Obama, who was then president, trying to fan the flames of racism and division. Here's what he said in 2013, clip 13.
When Trayvon Martin was first shot, I said that this could have been my son. Another way of saying that is Trayvon Martin could have been me 35 years ago.
There you go. The divider in chief. Could have been my son. Could have been my relatives. Could have been me, in fact, 35 years ago. And here comes a witness yesterday, basically with the exact same message. Look at MSNBC. This is just a sampling of some of their coverage yesterday, clip 14.
It is not just Derek Chauvin that is on trial today. There's so much more at stake here.
This isn't the first trial of a white police officer involved in the killing of an African American. I am already prepared for a not guilty verdict, but just given the history of this country, I have to intellectually and emotionally prepare myself for that. Even though we are not watching those demonstrations around the country all the time anymore, that doesn't mean that the energy still isn't there.
See, they're still there. They're ready. Those demonstrators, they were demonstrators, the ones last summer. The ones on January 6th, we'll get to that story again in a second here too. They were seditionists, insurrectionists. But these demonstrators, they're on standby. If it doesn't play out like they want it to, they're ready. They're ready to roll. There's MSNBC saying it's not just about Derek Chauvin. It's so much more. And so you get an attorney looking at this witness, an 18-year-old, saying, how did it make you feel? How do you feel about this? Well, in all honesty, I look at that and think it could have been my cousins. It could have been my father. It could have been my brothers. This is what qualifies for justice in the United States of America today. We had a piece at the Trumpet last summer. This is August 2020. It says, on top of that, no matter how many of these policies are enacted, their advocates will never absolve and forgive America for the sin of racism. Having become convinced this nation is institutionally, systematically racist, they will always be able to unearth evidence that, in their minds, proves this beyond doubt. It's a nation of 330 million people, after all. They're always going to be able to find one incident somewhere that verifies everything that they believe. It confirms the narrative. It confirms the story. It says, never will America or any nation on earth meet the illusory standard of racial and social justice these radicals harbor in their minds. Even if the nation progressed to the point of enforced equality on all educational, financial, and occupational outcomes for all races, it would only take one person in a bustling, messy nation of 330 million people to do something heinous to a black man, and the fury would erupt just as violently as it is now, or worse. See, it keeps happening. 400 years of this. We can't breathe. It just keeps happening over and over and over. Trayvon. George Floyd. Well, there's the case in Baltimore from, 2015? Quite a few other cases as well over the past 10 years or so. When the facts didn't matter. The laws broken by the African Americans didn't matter. What mattered is there was some kind of altercation between a white officer and a black suspect. It'll be interesting to follow the outcome of this trial. We're not predicting it going one way or another. But if you've read the Trumpet magazine, you're certainly aware of the fact that there is a ticking time bomb that's about to explode into race war, civil strife and division like we've never seen, even worse than the Civil War. Back in 2016, I thought this was interesting. It is related, but it also makes another point, which, given what we've seen in politics and elections, here again, the Trumpet, tomorrow's news today. This is my father writing in September 2016. This was the lead up to the election between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And he said, such rhetoric, speaking of Barack Obama, such rhetoric is inciting evils that are quickly becoming far worse than those it purports to solve. This is a slippery slope, my father said, that's moving America toward a race war and rule by dictatorship or tyranny. Listen to this. He says, I believe the radical left will do almost anything to cling to power in this coming election. He's speaking of 2016, and they certainly did. They tried to destroy Donald Trump the moment he did come out on top in that election in November of 2016. And then look at what they did in the last election. Oop, can't talk about that. Might get you censored. Might get you blotted out. It might get you canceled or deleted. He's exactly right. They'll do anything to cling to power in this coming election. Are they stirring up race problems in order to present themselves as the solution and to justify grabbing more control? They certainly are. They certainly are. Here they stirred up a race war pretty much last summer. I mean, there were thousands and thousands of white liberals, young ones too, involved in that as well. But it was all about, supposedly, it was all about a white-black thing. And then it's dialed back, but they're on standby. They're on standby for the election in November. They're on standby now, as you heard in that MSNBC clip. They're ready. If they don't get their way, if it doesn't turn out the way they want it to, they are ready to take to the streets. They've already proven they're willing to do it. They've done it. They took to the streets of America last year and destroyed cities. Destroyed entire cities. Kenosha, Minneapolis, Portland. It's still going on in Portland. And it's, sadly, it's going to even get worse. That's what your Bible prophesies. But here again, we see where it's all about the story. It's all about the narrative. The facts don't matter. That's why this program is so important. Because you can come and actually hear or view the truth, this story from Politico. You can now add Politico to the list of left-wing publications. You've got Reuters, you've got the AP. Politico now, for its part, is chiming in saying, you know what? There are all of these insurrectionists from January the 6th. It turns out probably not a lot of them are going to go to jail. They're probably going to spend more time in jail waiting for their trial than they will for any crime they might have committed. Listen to this subhead. The cases could embarrass the Biden administration, which has portrayed the January 6th siege as a dire threat to democracy. It could embarrass the Biden. Well, they certainly were part of it. But the media, including Politico, all of them, all of them said, this is a seditious act. This is insurrection. This was violent. This was an attempted coup. They were going to murder senators and congresswomen and men. They told us this, the media, the Democrats, the Biden people, all of them. And now here comes Politico dialing it back because, well, there's no evidence. Then you've got to have that in court, I guess. It says Americans outraged by the storming of the Capitol are in for a jarring reality check. Many of those who invaded the halls of Congress, it's fine for them to use invade when it's talking about, you know, going into Congress. Certainly, you'll if I have time later, you'll hear AOC talking about how to say it's an invasion from the southern border. Well, that's obviously racism. That's white supremacy speaking. But here they invaded Congress, says Politico, and they're likely to get little or no jail time. It says, while public and media attention in recent weeks has been focused on high-profile conspiracy cases against right-wing paramilitary groups like the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys, the most urgent decisions for prosecutors involve resolving scores of lower-level cases that have clogged D.C.'s federal district court. They've clogged them up, and these prosecutors, they're not offering plea deals so that they can maybe help the judge out and keep things moving along. They want the process, as I've said, to hurt these people, even the ones that are guilty of just a minor trespassing violation. They want them clogged up in court. They want them thrown in jail awaiting their trial. As I've said, I've covered other stories along this line. It says, a political analysis of the Capitol Hill riot-related cases shows that almost a quarter of the more than 230 defendants formally and publicly charged so far face only misdemeanors. It says dozens of those arrested are awaiting formal charges, even as new cases are being unsealed every day. So you've heard about this. This is the DOJ's biggest case in history, ever. Because they've got to find all the Trump supporters that they can to justify their charges early on. That they were attempting to take hostages and kill senators and overtake the government. It says there are two main reasons. Well, let me just skip ahead. It says, my bet is a lot of these cases will get resolved and probably without prison time or jail time. That's quoting from some former federal public defender. Further on, it says, the prospect of dozens of January 6 rioters cutting deals for minor sentences could be hard to explain for the Biden administration, which has characterized the Capitol Hill mob as a uniquely dangerous threat. Well, I mean, Politico, you did it too, okay? You did it as well. Everybody did. And they're still doing it. And people don't care. They're not concerned about returning to a story from 2 months ago and then, hey, we got it wrong. Here are the actual facts. I mean, the only reason they're coming out with these kinds of stories is to prepare people for the fact that there's no evidence. There's no evidence of insurrection or sedition. So they're not going to be going to jail or prison for that. We might be able to get them on trespassing. And so hundreds of cases going on. The court system in D.C. clogged with congestion because of all these prosecutors. Practically every office, every FBI office is involved in this. Joy Pullman, by the way, she's at the Federalist. She's talked about just how ineffective the FBI has been with respect to stopping mass killers, even when they've gotten tips ahead of time. So her point is, what good is the FBI? Because you look at those cases, she gives quite a few of them in her article. 2009, Fort Hood shooter, killed 13 people. FBI was tipped off on that. The Boston Marathon bombers, 2013, killed three, injured 264. The Pulse nightclub shooter, who killed 49 people and wounded 53 more. All, listen to this, all were known to the FBI, and several had been interviewed by the FBI before they went on killing sprees. And yet, where was the FBI to prevent those things from happening, to protect ordinary Americans? It says the FBI had also been warned numerous times about the Parkland, Florida school shooter before he killed 17 and injured 17 more in 2018. It also knew beforehand about the 2018 Nashville, Tennessee Waffle House shooter who killed four and injured two more, and the 2020 Nashville RV bomber. You could add to that the shooter in Boulder, Colorado last week. The FBI knew this was a Muslim that had a friend who was being investigated. That story fell off the earth, by the way. I mean, it was there for a couple of days, didn't fit the narrative, and so nothing. No more about just forget about Boulder. Okay, we might still be able to bring up Atlanta a little bit, but just forget about Boulder. That doesn't fit the story. It doesn't fit the story. It was a nightmarish tragedy, okay, but we've got to move on. We've got to move on from that. We certainly don't want to be guilty of Islamophobia. So just let that one go. So here is the FBI missing in action in all of these deadly shooting sprees. And at the same time, what do we see? We see practically every office in the FBI right across the entirety of the United States of America involved in the January 6th investigation. You know the one? The one where they're not really turning up any evidence to send people to prison? And you've got hundreds and hundreds of agents involved in this because they've got to find those dangerous MAGA supporters. I forget how many they sent down to that NASCAR garage, you know, the one with the rope. 12, 13 agents, was it? to investigate a hoax? There were stories just a few days ago about this supposed plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer. And this plot was hatched by an FBI agent that had worked its way into a right-wing group. He's the one that came up with the idea. He planted it and said, hey, let's kidnap her. And then all of a sudden, the ones that say, well, I'll go along with it, they're guilty because of what this FBI agent set them up to do. There's your Federal Bureau of Investigations, hard at work, trying to find Trump supporters. So USA Today, that's the report. I see it here in my notes. They said this week, all but one of the FBI's 56 field offices are being used to track down MAGA supporters who attended the January 6th protest. Can you believe this? This is the FBI. This is the Department of Injustice. And she's making the case that the FBI, it should be shut down because it's just become so thoroughly and completely politicized. And it's being used as a weapon to go after political enemies. So obvious. This Politico piece, switching back to that for a moment, talks about, again, the clogged legal system in D.C. and how that, well, it makes some of the same points we've made on this program, how that the process is what they intend to punish these people with. There was another story I had in my notes yesterday. I didn't have time to get to it, but these people that are trying to raise funds to defend themselves, you've got a concerted effort by the propaganda media to try to keep them, you know, like sort of like the GoFundMe type support, to try to keep people from funding these ordinary Americans that don't have deep pockets, certainly not like the DOJ. And the media, even when there's no evidence to send these people to prison, the media working to out them so that they can't really get adequate help as far as legal support is concerned. It's just sickening what's happening. This is justice in the minds of these deranged people. It doesn't matter what facts and evidence say. It's all about the story. It's all about the narrative. Politico says this, although prosecutors have loaded up their charging documents with language about the existential threat of the insurrection to the Republic, the actions of many of the individual rioters often boiled down to trespassing. It says, and judges have wrestled with how aggressively to lump those cases in with those of the more sinister suspects. Justice Department prosecutors sent expectations sky high in early statements and court filings describing elaborate plots to murder lawmakers. Descriptions prosecutors have tempered as new details emerge. They put this right into the court. It went right. Oh, yeah. Insurrection. Murder attempts. Armed insurrection. It went right into the legal system. It's just like the testimony from yesterday. How did that make you feel? You witnessed it. You're a young lady. How do you feel about this? That's an important component to this story. Because look, just like MSNBC said, this is so much bigger than Derek Chauvin. So much bigger. We've got to try to take down all of American society, if possible, white society. It's systemically embedded into us. And so let's bring down the system. This is what they want. This is what they were doing last summer. Justifying their riotous behavior based on one incident that confirmed everything that they've been taught by educators like Barack Obama. Well, I look at that individual and I have to tell you, I see my son. I see myself. That's me 35 years ago. That's just been the way it is for the black community. And because of that, we have a right to destroy. We have a right to tear down. We have a right to burn and smash and loot. This is turning into a lawless society. It already is. Anarchy. Judges 21 and verse 25. Everyone just out doing what seems right in their own eyes. You have these, by the way, these horrific attacks in New York. Black on Asian crime. The one young Asian getting just pummeled to the point of unconscious on the subway. And then the other, a lady being kicked in the face on the ground by a black man, a large black man. And then you have, there's a city official somewhere in New York. I just saw the clip earlier today. And she gets up and says, this violence against Asians, Donald Trump is to blame. So you've got this black on Asian crime, and it's the bad orange man who's to blame. That's the United States of America. It's scary. If you didn't know Bible prophecy, and if you don't, hopefully looking at this world today will drive you to your knees and to your Bible so that you can understand why these events, these disturbing events, are just happening every day. And of course, social media just makes it all the worse because it circulates, it spreads all over the world. And the whole world is seeing the United States unravel. The whole world is seeing an abuse of power on a grand scale. Politico says, prosecutors are facing pressure from judges to either back up their tough talk about sedition or to put a lid on it. Goes on and talks about how some of these judges are urging prosecutors, look, go get a plea deal. If it's simple trespassing, give them a slap on the wrist. Don't clog up the whole system. But these deranged prosecutors, they want that. Because it's that process. It's that process that is the punishment. There's so much more at stake here than just what happened on January the 6th. They could be saying very similar to the commentary following the testimony in Minneapolis this week. You have to understand, it's a much, much bigger story. Maybe we got a little overzealous. Maybe we were a little fuzzy on facts. But look, the underlying problem is there. The ends justify the means. If the means are a little bit dishonest or not, they don't rest in fact, that's okay today. It's for the greater good. Politico says some defendants appear to have had a felony obstruction of Congress charge added to their misdemeanor charges due to their social media comments. So now, I mean, if you've made some stop the steal, that's dangerous, that's seditious. So in this case, we might be able to boost the charges based upon some dumb comment made on social media. This is justice. I mean, this is keeping the Department of Justice busy. The FBI, every single field office except one, is involved in this. They are hunting for evidence to show that it was, in fact, what that DOJ spokesperson said last week. Oh, yeah, it's sedition. It's sedition, all right. It's definitely, remember what he said to Scott Pelley? It's definitely leaning in that direction. The evidence, I've seen it, he told the United States of America, national TV, I've seen it all. We've got the goods. People are going to be going to prison for a long time. Well, we've got quite the stack of news. I meant to say at the top of the segment that we might push back our continued study on Thy Will Be Done. We'll come back to that tomorrow for sure. But when we come back from our short break here today, with what time we have left, there's just a few other items that I'd like to discuss. You're listening to Steve and Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
A child is a miraculous blessing from God, an opportunity to build his family. In his word, God says to train them up in the way that they should go, so that when they are old, they will not depart from it. But how should you train up your child? Most parents do not know. Most parenting books offer only limited help because their authors do not understand the purpose and potential of your child's mind. As a result, millions of children grow up to be hopeless without any direction in life. Many come from broken homes. Many do not have a home. This is why so many young people become delinquent, rebellious, and unsuccessful as teenagers and adults. But you can rear successful, jubilant children and avoid the heartache of an unhappy and miserable home. God has outlined how to rear obedient children in His Word. Our free book, Child Rearing with Vision, will show you how to raise children that follow after God's abundant way of life. It will help you build a strong, united family. It will help you bring God's love into your child rearing. And it will guide you through the momentous journey of preparing your child to serve God the Father forever. Request your free copy of Child Rearing with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
The capacity for this location for COVID purposes is 250. For previous to COVID, the total capacity was 1,000. But I'm holding, like I said, you know, we're holding over 4,100 subjects in this location alone. So you do the math. We're way over capacity. We're like 700% over capacity.
There is some remarks from a border control officer at a Texas facility. The COVID regulations stipulate that they can only have 250 there at their site, their facility, and they've got 4,100. 4,100, if you can believe it. And then all these COVID positives just being let go into the country. The disease spreading all over the place. But that doesn't count. That doesn't count. There's sort of a greater good or a more important. There's a more important program from the radical left that's being carried out there. So in that case, COVID doesn't count. It's not a super spreader. You just basically turn a blind eye to it. Tens of thousands. Still, it's getting worse. Just streaming into the country. And a surge of unaccompanied minors. Children. AOC, by the way, she said this in a recent posting about how that this shouldn't be called a surge. Listen to her reasoning, clip two.
They want to say, what about the surge? Well, first of all, just gut check, stop. Anyone who's using the term surge around you consciously is trying to invoke a militaristic frame. And that's a problem because this is not a surge. These are children, and they are not insurgents.
Right, so there's your gut check. Stop! It's not a surge because they're not insurgents, says... this is a congresswoman working in Washington, D.C. One of your representatives. Listen also to what she said about the invasion. This is clip three.
And we are not being invaded, which, by the way, is a white supremacist idea.
Except when you say they're invading the Capitol. Now that's the gravest danger the United States has ever experienced. That's a full-scale invasion. No evidence to support it, we now know. But that's fine. That's an invasion. What's happening at the southern border? Look at their children. Don't say it's an invasion. Don't say it's a surge, even. Just welcome them in. And that's what the Biden, that's the Biden administration's policy. He kind of buckled a little bit and said, all right, we'll put Kamala over it. And what has happened since that decision was made last week? Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Well, I gave you the prophecies earlier this week on Monday's show, I believe it was. You can go back and look for more detail on this crisis at the podcast posted there at the Trumpet.com website. This one here from CNBC, just to switch over to COVID again. It says here, and this is the headline, CDC study finds about 78% of people hospitalized for COVID were overweight or obese. Wow, I mean, that's astounding. The facts, again, the facts and figures are now in. What does this tell us? What can we learn from this? This is science, right? This is science. It says here, an overwhelming majority of people who have been hospitalized, needed a ventilator, or died from COVID-19 have been overweight or obese, says the CDC. This is from Monday. I mean, this is fresh. Fresh off the press. The CDC itself, it says here, among 148,000 adults who received the COVID-19 diagnosis during an emergency department or inpatient visit at 238 U.S. hospitals last year, 71,000 were hospitalized. It says, of those who were admitted, 27.8% were overweight and 50.2% were obese. Overweight's defined by a body mass index of 25 or more, obese 30. It says the agency found the risk for hospitalizations, ICU admissions, and deaths was lowest among individuals with BMIs under 25. The risk of severe illness sharply increased, however, as BMIs rose, particularly among people 65 and older, the agency said. So if you were obese, if you're overweight and old, that's like a double whammy. And this is, again, this is just leaving aside diabetes, heart disease, some of those other comorbidities that we heard about. Some, not nearly enough. You heard about it, though, on this program. In fact, when I was sifting through some of my notes, looking for a quote or two, I ran across this program from last year. It was a year ago. This is from April 3rd, 2020. We're just a couple of weeks into the lockdown. And you heard the truth on this program as we talked about this very subject. The most vulnerable being those who are older, obese, who have diabetes, who have heart disease. That April 3rd program, by the way, it was titled Most Vulnerable Targets of COVID-19, the Unhealthy and the Disease-Stricken. You can see the title there on your screen. That's the most vulnerable group. And on that show from a year ago, we played this clip from a doctor who appeared on Fox News. So this is a year old. It's basically telling you what the CDC pointed out on Monday. We told it to you, and a few others did, not nearly enough. We told this to you last year. Here's Dr. Stephen Smith. He's from New Jersey, I think, on Fox News last year at this time, clip four.
The more we see this disease, the more we understand that severe rapid COVID disease, especially, is in diabetics or pre-diabetics. We have, I'm looking at 19 or 20 patients that are intubated, and 18 of the 20 were intubated, or all diabetic rather, and two are pre-diabetic. We have patients that are 150 kilograms, so I'm doing the math quickly, that's over 300 pounds. We're seeing a lot of this. And I don't understand. And just now, I think the world's catching up to this. The Seattle group published on their data in the New England Journal of Medicine, saying that 58% of their ICU COVID patients were diabetic, and that their average BMI was 33, which is morbidly obese. So that fits with our data. But
he's pointing out data that fits with his. that so many of these victims are morbidly obese. You heard the CDC talk about the BMI of 25 or 30. He pointed out 33. So many of the patients he was seeing, just morbidly obese, dying with COVID. With COVID. You might remember from the same show last year, we played this clip from the CrossFit founder, Greg Glassman, as he explained why some of these other ailments and diseases and comorbidities and obesity, why it made you so vulnerable. Glassman, by the way, he has since been canceled. I think he said, I forget we covered it on a show, but he said something insensitive, so he had to be removed. But this goes back to when he was still heading up CrossFit. Listen to what he said a year ago, clip five.
We want to ask ourselves, does it make sense to call all of this the deaths that are happening over here, and this is the overwhelming majority of them, 95% of the deaths in New York, 99% in Italy. And so it's fair to say that the death is happening over here to people that are already seriously ill and elderly. What was the number for Italy? 99% of the population had comorbidities, and the average comorbidities was 2.7, and the average age was 81 for a life with a life expectancy of 82.
Seriously ill and elderly, as he said there. Poor health, in other words, that leaves you vulnerable to these kinds of viruses, or to dying with these kinds of viruses. One more clip from Greg Glassman a year ago, clip six.
I see these as chronic disease deaths. What else would hurt people in this bucket? Let's look at kinetic. What's a fall imply for someone who's obese, diabetic, has had a stroke, is hypertensive? A bathroom fall? Does it pretend the same outcome for someone chronically diseased as it does for a healthy 25 years old? Not at all. And that would be true too of a toxin, anything kinetic, any kind of genetic problem, and any microbe is going to create a faster death precipitation within this crowd.
That was right toward the end of his video. And then he says at the end, CrossFit, that was the company he raised up. And of course, that's about not just exercise and weight training, but diet as well. He said CrossFit fixes chronic disease, whereas medicine babysits it. Medicine, we've certainly heard a lot about that. 380 days on from the 15 days to stop the spread. Now we're into the vaccine phase, the vaccine passport phase. Medicine, babysitting the illness, putting a Band-Aid on the problem instead of addressing root causes, as he alludes to there in his video. And you heard from the doctor before him. I mentioned that story last week about Krispy Kreme giving out the free donuts for the people that get the vaccine. There was another story following that says here, free glazed donuts aren't the only incentives now offered to Americans to encourage them to receive coronavirus vaccines. So it's not just donuts. There's more incentive. And they're all healthy, right? Every single one of them. It's really going to promote good health and fitness. It says, in a push to encourage people to receive experimental coronavirus shots, a diverse range of companies are offering free products to customers who provide proof that they've gotten the jab. It says further on, Krispy Kreme made headlines last week with the announcement that it would offer free daily original glazed donuts through 2021. Every single day, as I said last week, I would have just raced right across the clip and you never would have heard it perhaps until they said every day. Okay, one donut maybe, but every day. It says, according to the, well, let me back up. It says, the donut chain was criticized for the move, with skeptics pointing out the correlation between obesity and increased severity of COVID-19 symptoms. Well, I mean, aren't you contributing to the problem if you offer that? Well, come on, we've got to get, everybody's got to get the vaccine, whether you're obese or not. I mean, everybody's got to do it. And what could be wrong with having a donut every day? It says, according to the CDC, this, again, goes right together with the other story I just gave to you. According to the CDC, obesity may triple the risk of hospitalization due to the COVID-19. But Krispy Kreme isn't alone in offering free goodies in exchange for proof of the vaccination. It says, the Wall Street Journal reported that companies ranging from marijuana dispensaries to arcades are rushing to advance promotional giveaways to incentivize vaccination. It says here, these include Michigan-based marijuana dispensary, Greenhouse of Walled Lake, which is offering a free joint with proof of vaccination. The program is called Pot for Shots. So you take the shot and you get free pot. How about that? Get some free pot, you can get a free donut. And then go play some games at the arcade. It says here further on, the Brooklyn location of Junior's Restaurant and Bakery began dishing out free mini cheesecakes to vaccinated New Yorkers on Monday. Free fries and chips are available to patrons of Super Duper Burgers and Uno Dos Tacos in San Francisco. It says Midwest arcade chain, Up Down is giving away. It's hard to keep a straight face through all of this. This is life in the upside down world. It says the CDC reports that 28.6% of the overall U.S. population has received at least one dose of the shot. Well, more seriously, the article turns to the vaccine passport and says, look, some of the things they're doing in New York right now, Governor Cuomo, he's a radical, he's an extremist. And some of the measures he's putting in place, the article says it wouldn't be surprising if this is the sort of thing that just spreads across the country. You've got to prove that you've taken the shot. Imagine a world where you have to carry around a passport to show that you've injected your body with a foreign substance. And yet when we come to a presidential election of the United States of America, these same people are saying no one needs an ID. You can just drop it off in a drop box in some mysterious location and there's no signature match, nothing. We've got to make it easy for you to vote. But on the vaccine, well, you heard him yesterday. The preachers are out now. They're quoting scripture. If you don't get a vaccine and a support the passport idea, then, well, you obviously don't, you're not a follower of Jesus. You don't love your brother. Mr. Armstrong, going back to root causes, he said in the Seven Laws of Success, most degenerative diseases are modern diseases, penalties for eating foods that have been demineralized in food factories, usually an excess of starch, sugar, and carbohydrates and fats. Others are caused by a type of malnutrition, lack of needed minerals and vitamins in foods. It says, then people try to put the vitamins back into your systems by buying pills at the drugstore. Well, it's even worse than that, as you well know. Go ahead and get the pills, but then add to it drugs. And let medicine babysit your illness. Let medicine maybe extend your life, and it's not really a healthy life. It's not a good life, but maybe they can get you on a tube and extend your life just a few more weeks or months. Anything other than addressing root causes, cause and effect. Mr. Armstrong said, a famous director of a physical fitness program lecturing at Ambassador College reminded us that the medical profession has made great strides toward eliminating communicable diseases, yet is having little success coping with the increase of the non-communicable diseases such as cancer, heart disease, diabetes, kidney diseases. He says these latter are affected by faulty diet. They're caused by faulty diet. And then when you do have a communicable disease spread around the globe, like COVID-19, who are the most vulnerable? Well, the ones most engaged in physical sin. And we all make our mistakes, for sure. We're all guilty. And one of the lessons of these very days we're in this week, the days of unleavened bread, is that once you acknowledge your sin, then go forward and repent and change. Make changes for the better. Get to the root causes and overcome that weakness and overcome that sin and go forward with Christ. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Send feedback, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.